Well, William van der Bloemen, I am honored to have you on the show today. My time with you goes back several years ago with Tim Stevens and the Executive Pastors Network. So I'm honored to be with you once again and talk about Be the Unicorn book. William van der Bloemen is the founder of the van der Bloemen Search Agency, author, speaker. He's been featured on Forbes numerous times, entrepreneur. And we will get into his latest work shortly. So thank you for being here today, William.
Love it. Thanks, Lance. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. Well, my first question that I ask every guest on the show is tell us about the last date you and Adrian had, and what does that reveal about your leadership?
The last date we had was with our good friends that live two streets up. And I think what the date revealed about my leadership is when I'm at home, I can turn off the leadership gear. I don't have to do it. Adrian runs everything and is great. So I actually like if you no, seriously, like if you know the disk inventory or whatever you use, there's the at work version of William and there's the at home version. And they're not far apart, but I do get to let off the gas about worrying about details. So it's good.
That's good. That's good. So y'all companion together in that way. That's
We
great.
do.
That's
We
great.
do.
So William,
But
you're the
it totally flips when we go on vacation.
okay.
My wife will be early for her funeral. She is on time everywhere all the time, except when we're on vacation. Then I have to do all the details. She's late for everything. It's amazing. It's like she gets to exhale. So more than that, bonus material. Sorry.
No, that's great. That's great. So you're also the father. I think this is important to know, of seven kids. So what is the oldest age and the youngest age?
Our oldest just turned 30, and our youngest is 13, and I think she turns 25 next week.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I have my first 13-year-old in the house right now. So
Oh, boy, boy or
oh,
girl?
girl, I've got four girls. Thir
Oh,
13,
so
13 to eight.
yeah, you're about to get really dumb, my friend. Give it 1 year when they're 14, every time. I have five
All
girls. I've been dumb a long time.
right. Well, I will make sure to call you, and hopefully that's the next book you're working on. Oh man, the heartache, and I guess probably what I keep learning about myself and marriage and parenting is like, man, that God has a way of just growing us up in this journey. Like
Yeah.
over and over and over for sure.
That's well said.
Yeah. So tell us after you and Adrian have a date, whether with friends two blocks over or possibly on a vacation, if you're this type of person, you've enjoyed a great meal, you're healthy, it looks like you take care of yourself. What is your preferred physical regimen? How do you stay physically well?
Oh yeah. So some would say run, others would say jog. Depends on perspective, I guess. But I try and stay pretty regular with that, maybe 30 miles a week, something like that. And then I try to do some weight training, very, very not special weight training, about 4 times a week. And then the thing that I'm trying to get better at, which frankly, I should probably just drop the other two for the sake of stretching. And it's a little bit of yoga, whatever. I probably just made some listeners mad, but yeah, stretching is the stretching and muscle mass are the ball game when you get your 50s.
Yes. 30 miles, that's no small feat to do that, log that in every week.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5 miles a turn.
Usually one long one and then a bunch of 4 milers, maybe
Okay.
five, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. That's great. Yeah, mine looks like jogging too. I work out with several guys in their 30s, and I'm like, man, I just feel and look slow. I guess because I am, but I'm still chugging along. So,
Yeah.
all right. So as we progress into the book here in a moment, I think it's important to hear people's your heart behind what you've been up to, because I know a lot of times people go you're making these rounds about your book and so forth, but I think For myself, helping people connect with you and your heart around your leadership and life allows people to understand why you keep writing and doing the things that you're doing. So will you share with us possibly a little bit of your story about launching Vander Blumen, the season that comes out of? Because right, we're in a recession season right now. And I know that when you launched that, it was in a recession season. So maybe for those listening, just share your heart around launching that and the season that you came out of doing that.
Yeah.
How long did it take? Just a few minutes. I mean, I know it's a complicated question.
It's all good. I was a pastor in a previous life, so I'll try not to ramble, but lead pastor of pretty good sized churches. You have to be careful saying large when you live in Texas, because, you know, it's Texas, but fairly large churches, and went through divorce, which I would not recommend to listeners. Wasn't a divorce the tabloids would have even paid attention to, but it was just, you know, not fun. Found myself as a single dad with four kids and no idea what to do. Church was great to me, but I left and went into the corporate world. And while I was at this Fortune 200 company, I watched the CEO, who'd been there 9 years, which I didn't know. 9 years is like a lifetime for a company that size. So he's like, yeah, we need to find my successor. They hired this thing called a search firm, which I'd never heard of. I was on a management rotation plan that started in HR for a year. So I was kind of a water boy on the team for the succession and got to sort of watch what was going on with this search firm. So in 90 days, they had their next CEO. You know, I was a senior pastor at First Presbyterian Houston, which is where Sam Houston went. Big church. And a little bit of a big deal in our little world. They took 3 years to find me. And when I left, you know, preacher gets divorced, it creates some ripples, but the church is way bigger than me. That didn't affect. It took 3 years to find the next guy. I was only there 6 years. So you got a 12-year span, and half the time the church is looking for a pastor and half the time they have it. And everybody thought that was normal. And I'm sitting here watching this oil and gas company, which I guess I don't know if there's a bigger Death Star in the galaxy right now than oil and gas, but it's you know, the one that everybody hates. 90 days. And, you know, I can say this cleanly in hindsight, but I'm sitting there going, why does the business world have a better solution than the bride? Yeah. And it created this holy discontent, is a, you know, one of those phrases a lot of people know. Could we build something for the church? So I went home. Adrian and I had been married three months, maybe. Just blended our family, bought a house that we barely afford. And I came home and said, babe, I think I'm supposed to quit my job and start something new for churches. And she just looked at me and said, that's because churches love new ideas, right? Said no one ever.
Right.
So, and as you referenced, it was the fall of 2008. And I know if you're a millennial or Gen Z, you have no frame of reference here. We've been talking about maybe going into a recession for about 2 years now. It still hadn't happened. It might, but it hadn't happened. This was right. The Great Recession. This was like everybody's losing their house. And I decided to quit my job. It was not a smart move, but God was in control. And I kind of think, Lance, that we started by God's grace when it was slow enough that we could practice the craft a little bit before it took off. And so more than you wanted to hear, but that's kind of the origin story, if you will. And 15 years later, here we are.
15 years later. I guess I was there probably in 2015 or 2016 with Tim and y'all's executive pastors cohort.
Yeah, sure.
In 15 years, how many pastors and or nonprofit leaders have you placed at this point?
Yeah, over 3,000.
3,000.
Yeah.
Incredible. Congratulations, man. That is absolutely amazing.
We're learning as we go.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're only as good as your last search. Yeah. Kind of like you're only as good as your last sermon.
Depend on who's listening that day, right?
That's right. That's right.
That's good. That's good. All right. So when you get out of alignment, right, we all have to keep in check what God is doing in and through us in our hearts. But we all know that like out of misalignment happens, right? We get out of step with Jesus. How do you know when you're out of alignment, and what do you personally do to get back in step?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a sign of some measure of maturity when you can figure out, yeah, I'm out of alignment. I think earlier in life, I didn't even know until I had blown something up. Right. And then you go, well, how'd that, and you start drawing a line back. I'm starting to sense a little bit more of, hold off. Of course, now I'm old enough that it's, you know, I'm not rambunctious anymore. So it's not as big a ripple that I create. But I think, Lance, this is going to sound pietistic, but if I really have a bad day, mm-hmm. I can usually draw a straight line back to how the day started. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have my routine done in the morning, it throws the rest of the day off. And, you know, for me, I have a first in, first out rule, and I'm not 100% following it, but first in, I read something from God. First out, I thank God for something. So inbox, outbox, right? Yeah. And those are all, if I have a bad day and you say, how'd that inbox, outbox go? It's usually either low quality or perfunctory or not real.
It always goes back to the basics, right? Just the
always good. Of all the things I've written for Forbes, and I've written a lot for them, far and away the number one article I've ever written was how successful people start their day. Everyone wants to know, like, how's that work?
Keep it simple. Well, and it's funny. I know the subtitle of your book is, you know, has data in it. And we're all looking for data that points to something. But at the end of the day, we're emotional creatures and we make decisions based on emotion. And so if your heart's not in alignment first thing in the morning, it doesn't matter what data and stories you bump up against. You know, first things
matter.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. Well, thank you for sharing. So let's get into Be the Unicorn a little bit. 12 principles, 12 things that you found, over 30,000 research data points. What was the origin of this book?
Pure selfishness. Okay. And then it turned into something I had to share. Selfishness and curiosity. So I've had, I remember meeting you, it was back at the old office. There is something that happens a few times in life, many for those who do interviews for a living, but have you ever met somebody and within 5 minutes you're like, this one's different? Yep. I want to know them. I'm signing up for their email newsletter. I'm getting their podcast downloaded. I want to be next. I want to hire them. I want to, like, there's just a magic dust around some people you meet. I've always wondered what is going on that makes me that gullible. I don't, like, you know, what voodoo magic are you doing that's got me like locked in on you immediately? So that is kind of the curiosity. During the pandemic, you know, every one of our clients was closed indefinitely and not hiring. That'll free up your calendar, by the way. We did a lot of service sort of stuff for churches during that time, but we also had a lot of time, and I was able to realize that we've now done in our searches, the very best candidates get a very long format interview and face-to-face. And we, as of the pandemic, had done 30,000 of those and tracked it all. Like, we have everything sorted and organized, and, you know, because I have smart people to help that happen. So selfishly, I'm like, you know, we could probably figure out what this voodoo magic is, and then we would learn how to spot it, and we'd be a better search firm. We'll be better at our craft if we learn how this happens. So we got all these 30,000 together, and then we said, who are the best of those, and who got promoted, and who adds value, and who, you know, who are the real winners? And then we, once we had those identified, we said, do they have anything in common? And the answer was yes. And the answer was very different from what I thought it would be. Yeah. I thought super high IQ. No. Maybe they all went to great schools. Nope. Make good money. Nope. Not even like he was the quarterback, she was the head cheerleader. Not even that mundane, right? Or great hair, you know, it right. wasn't even that. It was habits. Hmm. And I picked the word really intentionally because it's not traits.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, traits you're born with. Habits are what you choose to do. Yeah. And these 12 habits, which were all some manifestation of Jesus' command to love one another. Sure. It's all human-to-human skills, but very intentional. And every one of these 12 habits, the unicorns, as we call these, you know, unusually gifted people, the unicorns have a bent toward those habits, and nearly all of the rest of us have a bent away from the habits. But it doesn't change the attainability of the habits. If you apply yourself, and you read the list of these 12 habits, you're like, duh, William. Well, yeah, duh. And it's backed by data. So it's real duh, you know. you read the habits, you go, oh, yeah, whatever, whatever. I kid people, Lance, and I tell them, you know, an alternate title could have been, well, I guess mom was right. Because that's kind of the list. It's not a shockingly, oh, I bought this book and I opened it up and I just, what? No, but it's backed by data. And what I've tried to point out is just how uncommon these habits are for the rest of us. Mm. So that people can see, if I make a few changes, if I make a few tweaks, the data proves I will stand out of the crowd. And once we realized, you know, this is not a case study to be, you know, shared in-house and figure out how to do better searches. Once we figured out, no, we now have a roadmap. Like, we're no longer spotting unicorns and trying to get good at that. I can train you to become one. Well, then it's like, oh man, books are a pain in the butt, Lance. I don't know if you've written one, but like, they're not, don't do it unless you think of like a wizard school in Britain. That works. Those books sell. But yeah, so we just felt like this is a roadmap. This is going to be helpful. And particularly right now when the workforce is really, really crowded and about to get really, really disrupted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I guess probably 6-8 weeks ago when I first saw that you were launching this book, I wrote on one of your posts somewhere, I was like, well, this goes against the grain of everything I tell my clients. Cause I'm like, I try to ensure like that they don't get like this massive ego of like, so I'm like, hey, you're not a unicorn. Like just stay in your lane and know what yours is to do. Right. But I'm sure some marketing person helped you come up with the really tight word instead of calling it something about your mom, everything your mom needed or everything you needed to know with about your mom. Share with us. Let's do this. Share with us one of these habits that you believe is derailing leaders currently. Like just one.
Yep. Well, I can think of 12. The one that is the rarest of the 12 is self-awareness. So we took the 30,000 unicorns. We surveyed them, a big long survey, and we asked them to force rank, you know, where do you, if you had to figure out what your best at, worst at, they ranked this their lowest gift. The unicorns did. So then we also surveyed 250,000 people, similar survey. And we asked people to, are you average, slightly above, slightly below, way below average in this particular trait? So when it got to self-awareness, the general population, 250,000, 93% of everyone said that they are above average in self-awareness. Now, like, I'm not a applied math major or anything, but 93% of a group is not above average. It's not, it doesn't, 50 is, that's all. So not only is it the least common among the unicorns, it's the biggest blind spot for the rest of us. And I think it's, I said this to a friend of mine not too long ago, it's amazing to me what this research has done to the way I read some of Jesus' teachings. You know, Jesus talks about, before you go after the splinter in Lance's eye, get the log out of your own way. And I, you know, I've read that a lot of ways. I've read it as, don't judge lest you be judged. I've read it as, hey, don't give people a hard time. You're a mess. But now what I'm realizing is with this self-awareness, William, until you work out your own crap, you're not going to be helpful to anybody. It's not that you shouldn't help your brother with the splinter in their eye. It's that you can't even see until you get your own stuff worked out. And I think that is derailing leaders, and not just leaders, but all of us at a very deep level. So you said I could only pick one. The other one would be, let's just go with one.
Self-awareness. Well, some others may come up and we could unpack self-awareness to the nth degree. And I probably, that's one reason I enjoy coaching so much. It's the process of asking questions for people to stop long enough to think about themselves, right? We live in a culture that's just go, 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 go. And all of a sudden you give a safe environment for somebody to do some personal reflection and dig deep into their heart. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, I didn't see that. Right. What is it for you? Which one of these data points, these habits for you, that you lean into, that's almost like a superpower per se. What's natural?
Oh, for me, the one that's very natural to me is responsiveness.
Yeah. Okay. How so?
I get back to people. I'm maniacal about it. And now I say that and somebody's going to write in and say, I wrote him last week and I have not perfect, but it really bothers me not to get back to people. I mean, it makes me a little bit crazy if I haven't. So, you know, we found that nearly every human is terrible at getting back to people, just horrible. And unicorns have a pretty hard bend toward getting back to people. And it's the difference maker in them getting noticed. So that one comes natural to me.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about maybe churches for a moment. What are in that out of these habits? What are churches struggling with?
All of them. All of them. No, really.
I mean, in 2 decades of Mr. pastoral work, I mean, I don't doubt that, right? But
no. I'm serious. When is the last time you visited a church? And when you got out of your car in the parking lot, there was somebody that within 5 minutes, you're like, I want to know them. I want to be around them. And then when you walk in the hallway and you meet somebody, say, golly, there's another one. I want to get to know them too. I don't have enough room on my little card. I've got to write all these phone numbers because everyone I meet is super magnetic and inviting. And we're not. We're terrible. The last study I read about churches engaging with visitors showed that like 94% of all churches think they're amazing at dealing with visitors, and 3% of visitors said that the churches were good at dealing with them. It's just tremendous disconnect. And I think if churches will train their teams around these 12 habits, they're going to feel more like Jesus to visitors. It's going to feel more special. If you had a whole team of people that visitors walked in and said, these are the most amazing people ever, I want to be around these people, you would have no problem filling your seats.
mean, you're talking about basic customer service, right?
Basic
customer
service.
And you walk into so many environments right now, and they're struggling with this core principle, and people are not giving them 24, 48 hours. They've already made a decision.
That's right.
And you've shared some of this data on a recent podcast that I went back and listened to, but I remember you sharing it back when I was with y'all several years ago about texting within the first 30 minutes. Will you share some of that first immediate 24 hours for anybody that's listening, yeah, whether church or customer service, HR?
It's a fascinating study. It was done by a marketing company. And it's just one, I mean, I've seen this so many different places, but let's dive onto one example. This marketing company that basically was it's called inbound marketing. So you've done this before. You fill out a form, somebody gets in touch with you. Nowadays, you enter any part of your email address and it's all over your social media feed. But like original was fill out a form, somebody will call you. So the question was, how much does it matter how quickly we get back to people when they fill out the form? Okay. So people who responded to those forms within a minute with a thoughtful response, not a chatbot, 98% chance they were going to talk to that lead and have a conversation. If they waited 20 minutes to write back, 60% chance. So you've thrown away the slam dunk. And now you still got a high percent shot, but it's just 60%. I can go through a bunch of different markers, but the key one for me was 24 hours. You wait 24 hours to get back somebody that fills out a form. You have less than 1% chance of ever hearing from that person again. Okay. Oh. That's just the way the world works. Average response time by companies to customers who fill out a form, 42 hours. So these people that are paying all this money for marketing and trying to get leads are literally throwing away money by not getting back to people. You can tell it makes me a little mad. It's just not hard. Just get back to people. Yeah. Same's true in church. Probably, I don't think I told you this long ago because it's a little newer study. The number one way to convert a first-time donor into a regular donor is for the preaching pastor to text the first-time donor on the day they visit. How weird is that? That would have sounded invasive and stalkish to me, yeah, 3, 4, 5 years ago. Nope. You get back to people right away, they will remember you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost, I don't know what the language is, and when you think of it, like I hear this word like of honor. Like people want to be honored and seen, like, right? And I think that's what's happening when you think about a senior leader, a senior pastor connecting. Like, that's just a position of honor, of encouraging good somebody that they, I see you.
I like that. That's good.
And Vander Blumen, which data for you are you most proud of on your team? Which one of these habits?
Wow. That is such a good question. I think when we're at our best, we do a lot of these well. But what I'd like to think we're always doing is being curious. Because, we do work with nonprofits. We work with for-profits. We're doing a couple searches for an aerospace company right now that loves Jesus. And I mean, so we do a lot of stuff other than church. But churches are the backbone. They're the reason we started, right? And I am yet to meet a church that's the same as another church. And, you know, we're growing, so we're hiring. So new people come in, and I do a little bit of the onboarding. And one of the things I'll tell them is, hey, 30,000 interviews, 3,000 searches, probably worked with 5,000 churches over the years. Let me just tell you something. If you've seen one church, you have seen about one church. That's all. Yeah. You're just different. They're, yeah, just different. There's an old, probably the first premier search firm in the world was, it still is, called Russell Reynolds. Sort of made the industry. So Russ is actually a guy. I thought it was a Mr. Russell and a Mr. Reynolds. But no, Russ Reynolds is the guy. I think he probably went to VBS with Noah. But he's still alive and kicking at 455 years old or whatever. Russ became a friend because he reached out to us about finding a pastor for his church. I'm like, dude, don't you have like a search firm? It was kind of funny, but he's like, no, church is different. Do this for me. Okay, fine. So early in our friendship, I said, hey, man, I was a lot younger then. If you were my age right now, starting out, what do you know now that you wish you would have known then? You know, because I got the guy who pretty much started the whole industry. Here's what he said. He said, every search is different. Even if you're doing multiple searches for the same client, they're different and you just got it. So curiosity would be the one that I would hope we're known for. Not treat, oh, you're another church of 300 somewhere outside Atlanta. No. We're going to dive into you.
That's so good. That's so good. What is on the horizon? And here's the thing. Like, I know, I can only imagine the sweat, labor, tears, you know, put into a book. And this is probably like not a real helpful question to say, well, what's next? Right.
Yeah.
But I know with somebody like yourself, an entrepreneur, you're constantly trying to look at the horizon, yeah, constantly going for what's next. What's currently stirring in you? And what is that dream about?
Well, one lesson from the pandemic that got highlighted for me is the idea of seeing the future as a leader, right? Sometimes that's just seeing one step more, not 10 years of vision. And I, you know, when David wrote, your word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path, this was not some halogen bulb that could shine a light for 4 miles. And, you know, these were little lanterns that people tied to their shoes, and it literally gave them enough light for the next step. So, you know, we had so many zigzags during 2020. I think God used all that to remind me, William, you don't have to see 10 years in front of you. You have to see just a little bit more than everyone else, just a little bit. And for me, this is going to sound, I don't know, like a popular thing to say, but I am absolutely intrigued by the changes that are coming with AI. And if you're not intrigued by it, you're going to get left behind. I think this is going to be a bigger jolt to the system than email was. And, you know, you can read scary studies. I don't really know why anyone gets scared. If we're really living in the prequel to the Terminator, we're all going to die. So, and Jesus is still Lord. So whatever. So just don't lose any sleep over that. But what if this is another iteration, which has happened so many times in human history, where we've run across a new technology that creates efficiencies. It replaces some old jobs. It creates some new ones. And we live alongside the technology, printing press. I mean, you can go through. So that's kind of where we're sitting right now, which is a really cool place to be alive. I mean, who gets to live in these once every 500 year disruptions? And we're doing everything we can here to say, how do we embrace this and live alongside it now? And I think churches are going to need to do the same. And it's going to drastically change the future for pastors. It will not be long before you can have a computer generate a better message than you could ever write.
Yeah.
What do you do with that?
It is mind boggling. I throw it in ChatGPT and it's like, oh, that's incredible. That's really well said. And I have
an attorney friend. So here we are. We're not even a year since ChatGPT hit the scene. I have an attorney friend, managing partner of a very large firm, and he says they are looking at technology now that will read all the court transcripts, everything the jury's heard, and then write the closing argument for them.
That's outstanding.
Wild. Wow.
That's incredible.
So what a time to be alive, but man, you better be on it. You better figure it out. And so we're just trying to figure, I mean, there are whole industries that are going to not be run by humans. That's what's got my attention right now. Maybe a year from now, it'll be a big flop and it isn't going to happen or what, but I don't think so. I think we're on the frontier of a new, a new day.
Two things that I see, I'm active on LinkedIn, is one is that people are doing the generated images of, you know, professional headshots, whatever. And I'm like, oh, that's a really good picture. But you're like, oh, that's an AI picture. The second thing is I'm using this all the time, and I'm telling everybody, Dexa.ai. I don't know if you're a Huberman Lab person at all, but Andrew Huberman.
Tell it to me one more time.
Dexa, DEXA.ai. Huberman's Stanford researcher, science, wellness, longevity, and all those things. But you can go in and type any wellness, fitness, Alzheimer's, folic acid, whatever, and it's going to search all these podcasts, all this research that's already out there, and put it into a meaningful answer for you. And you just start clicking on the exact podcast, the exact article. It's absolutely mind-boggling. Like, I used it this morning. I mean, it's just so fun. But you're absolutely right. If people aren't aware and are waking up, it's like, it's going to shift things. But hopefully people realize, like, relationships still win. Community still still trumps, like what you're talking about. Just text somebody and realize that they're human.
Well, that's why we kind of rushed the publication of the book, because now's the time to learn your human skills. Now's the time to learn how to treat one another very intentionally. And when it comes time to cutting positions and jobs, if you are a unicorn in human to human skills, you will not be unemployed.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So just closing thoughts, questions. What was the last book you read?
I'm reading the Britney Spears memoir.
No, sorry. Kidding.
Sorry.
I did not expect that one, but
yeah, well, I chose the answer intentionally. I'm not done reading it, but my wife and I, we do probably 35 books a year. She's probably going to hit 50 this year, and we talk about them. And so she read it in her book club. She's like, would you, you know, listen to it while you're running? Doesn't take a lot of brain power, but it's fascinating, the whole mental health piece to the whole thing. The answer you're looking for, I just finished Benjamin Franklin by Walter Isaacson, which is a fabulous, fabulous biography, and he's the master of biographies. Problem is, it takes a long time. You don't read 30 Walter Isaacsons in a year, so you have to balance it with Britney.
I think that's what makes you a unicorn, is that you can share that you're reading Britney Spears. That's awesome. Thank you. What's a movie that you recently watched, or possibly one that you're looking forward to?
We're not very good at movies. My wife and I like talking too much. I used to be more movies. We'll do programs together. Only Murders in the Building. Fantastic conversation show. So,
okay. Where is that at? Where do I find that?
Hulu.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't seen this?
No.
Oh my gosh, you're missing Martin Short.
Okay.
Steve Martin and Selena Gomez. It's the best mix-up ever.
All right. We'll check that out. I'm looking forward to Boys in the Boat coming out here in about 7 days.
Great book.
Great. Phenomenal book. Yep. All right. So, William, so we connect again in a few years from now. Who do you want to say that you've become? Who are you becoming over the next 2 or 3 years?
Grandfather. Mm-hmm. Our 30-year-old's finally getting married. I kept telling him, don't marry a mission, marry a partner. And I think I overcooked it because he took forever. And so we're ready.
Grandfather. I love it. Well, congratulations on your book, being a grandfather, your success that you've had with Vander Blumen. And thank you so much for your time today. Would there be anything that you would like to close with?
No, man. I appreciate you and what you're doing. And I hope the book can help people. If you're into the coaching sort of thing, we did also build a software tool that assesses you in these 12 habits, see where you line up, where your blind spots are. There's a 360 feature that can be built into it. It's pretty fun. So
outstanding.
All right. Of that stuff is at theunicornbook.com.
Theunicornbook.com.
That's it.
All right. Well, thank you, William.
Thanks, Lance. Appreciate you.
Absolutely.